This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
From the 253, I got let go from a sales job for poor results only 6 months in, even though I had a 30% increase over the previous year. Ugh. UPS driver. Slower workers get paid more overtime while fast, efficient workers forced to do the work the others didn't.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that sounds like terrible.
I mean, could always have to go to the bathroom in a bottle, I suppose. So maybe it's not quite as bad.
That's Amazon. Places. Wait, we shouldn't be saying these things. Like, that's, yeah, that's no way to get sponsorships. From the 253, after being a supervisor for 2 years without a raise, I had a review from my boss of 2 weeks and was given a 1% raise. I no longer work there. I'm going to say that my worst measurement ever came, and it was a discussion while I worked at the Seattle Times. One of three different occasions that I worked at the Seattle Times. And the conversation was about web traffic and who got the most hits and why there were certain different stories. And I remember just stopping in the middle of like, so if we're going to use web hits as the criteria for what we're producing, what story in the history of our newspaper has the most web hits? Because I knew the answer. I knew the answer, and it happened in Enumclaw. And some of the people out there have been here for a minute, know exactly which story I'm talking about, because there was an encounter between a man and a horse in Enumclaw, which ended up with the man dying.
Whoa.
Yeah. And I know this because it was covered. Also, my girlfriend from college wrote the story about it. Yeah. And people demanded to know exactly how the man died in said encounter with a horse. And that story explaining the exact way this unfortunate individual or criminal in some cases, given the Congress that was taking place with the horse.
Okay. Now we know. All right. I think it's time for Blue 32.
That was the most trafficked. That was the most hit upon story. So I was like, unless that happens to happen, right, I don't know if I'm going to be able to live up to the traffic expectations that were generated by such an event.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, let's move on. Let's move on.
By the best little horse house in Enumclaw. It's time for Blue 42.
Here we go. This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, half back, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
Nay. Morning, Bump. How are you now?
Good morning. I'm doing horrible. All right, get it out the way. All you Laker haters out there.
You lost.
We lost
horribly.
Got spanked. We deserved it, though. Hey, big ups to the Suns, you know. They had a better team. Chris Paul did his thing.
Better organization.
Booker was on point. They got contributions from guys off the bench. They did what they had to do. Good job. Horrible morning for me.
I would like to read you a tweet from Paul Gallant's Twitter account 9 hours ago.
Give it to me.
All caps. Paul Gallant says, all right. Who's going to stomp on the logo? What was it? Take a bow at midcourt and stomp on the logo.
At the same time, baby. Give me some river dance all over that thing. Of course, I'm bitter about my own basketball team going down. Well, Bump, at the very least.
Dude, how did AD get so old so quick?
You called it, man. He ages in dog years.
Like, he was
a great Dane.
2 years ago.
He's a great Dane. Now he's, you know, they get hurt all the time.
2 years later, he's done.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not done. He'll come back and play, but can you count on him to be healthy? He got hurt playing basketball last night. Like, just normal basketball. Didn't fall and twist anything. Just
pulled
got hurt
his
jumping.
Groin.
Just got hurt jumping.
R.I.P. in peace, Michael Bumpus. Your Los Angeles Lakers. Too
and
soon.
The dude in Enumclaw.
Oh, boy. Question one. You know, I don't think we've said Chris Carson's name once this offseason. Outside of when he re-signed with the Seahawks, I mean, it's been a while since I feel like we've even said his name. So, Bump, this is a guy who last year had his carries basically halved, even though he still played in a pretty good amount of games, 12 games versus 15 the year before. What do you expect his role to be, and how would it possibly change this coming season?
Man, I expect it to be the same, honestly. He's going to be the number one back. Carlos Hyde isn't there anymore. Rashad Penny's coming off an injury. DJ Dallas shown that maybe he's not ready to have 10, 15 carries a game. He's still going to be the guy. Now, how are they going to use him? Should we expect like a Todd Gurley type season from him? I don't know, and I don't think so. I think his job is to have 20 to 25 carries a game, pick up first downs, and lower the boom. Do what you do. That's what this team has been missing. I feel like half of that season is a running back who's going to run through somebody. I hopped on a podcast last night with a couple high school kids, man, and that they were just enamored with Chris Carson, his running style, how we don't see that anymore. And to hear these young dudes talk like that, it really warmed my heart, because everyone's looking for that Alvin Kamara, you know, the guy swinging out the backfield and that scat back. They're like, no, we love the way he runs. That's just what he needs to get to. Maybe he doesn't rush for 1,000 yards, but he still brings that intensity to this team. If he doesn't rush for 1,000 yards and Rashad Penny rushes for 500 to 600 yards, I'm okay with that, because he is getting older, and you want him to be there later in the season. It's all good early in the season, mid-season, yes. But availability is what's gotten these guys in trouble late. He just has to be healthy. I expect the same Chris Carson we've seen over the years.
It's this weird spot where I think they have to manage his touches. But one of the things
Why do we have to manage his touches?
Don't you feel like with Chris Carson that it's of the utmost importance to have him at 100% for the last couple of months of the year? Because do you trust Rashad Penny? I mean, I don't know if I can do that yet.
I don't know if pitch counts help, though. Do they? I feel like that's longevity.
What do you think?
Of your career as opposed to in a season. I have a hard time saying, I want him to control how much he touches it earlier, because I don't know if that keeps him healthier.
Man, I want them to do whatever they need to do to win the ball game. And if he is nicked up a bit, then you let the youngster come in and get some carries. It's more like, let's be in communication with each other. Chris, how you feeling? Or Chris feels something like, hey, man, let the youngster get in. Remember that one time he pulled himself out on the goal line so Rashad can get a touchdown? You know, like things like that. Just listen to the athlete. If you communicate, they'll tell you exactly what they're feeling and what they feel needs to be done in that moment. So let him run the horse. But if he needs a break, he taps the helmet, bring the youngster in.
There is an interesting development in, I think, his game the last couple of seasons. Only 12 games last year, and he still had 37 receptions, which is the amount of receptions that he had in 2019. Underrated hands. I feel like as a receiver, that is something you don't really think of with Carson, but he does have that in his tool set.
Yeah, he does. And it's every back needs to have that nowadays, especially in these offenses. But it's nice when you have an every down back guy who can do that. You know, he's getting in the flats. That's pretty much what backs are. They're typically your check down guys. All else fails, boom, get to the back. Give me 3 or 4 yards. A swing or an arrow is pretty much a glorified run. You get 3 yards out of that, that's a plus. Carson, he's even gone on record and said he has the best hands on the team. So let's see what he does.
Oh.
From the 570, according to Jake, Chris Carson is the Cal Bell running back of the Seattle Seahawks. Somebody talking about that being a malapropism. I think that's perfect, right? Got to have more cowbell. Give me more cowbell. I want him to be the Cal Bell running back. That's exactly right. Got to have more cowbell. Question two. I've never been the guy, Bump. I've never been that guy who's like on players for not going to the voluntary workouts. I've never been that dude. Turns out I've kind of become that dude this year. Will Dissly talked, we'll play the sound for him. He talked about vets not being at these OTAs and how they're working on it. And then I'll have a question for you. First, here's Will Dissly kind of explaining what's going on.
We have a strong leadership, you know, with the Hawks, and obviously there's a lot of confidence in, you know, the veterans, and, you know, we kind of decided to just do Zoom. I mean, we operated really well last year. We were able to go through the entire thing and then show up to fall camp and just kind of start ready to go. And so the same kind of expectation was, you know, if we're all focused and we're training, we're getting our bodies right, you know, it's so personal. We're able to go with our trainers and, you know, get a throwing session here or there, but be with our families, which we weren't able to do for 6 months. So, you know, it was kind of up to us, and we decided to kind of hold out. But there's definitely groups gathering. Seattle's a great place right now. So we'll definitely be there for many and maybe even possibly sooner.
So that sounds all well and good. Like, I totally get that. But that's basically saying, like, hey, trust us. We'll get ready. We'll take care of ourselves. The part that's harder for me is that you had a quarterback who was basically saying, I'm not just going to trust you, the team, to get make the additions that are best. Like, I kind of want a little more input and a little more say. And it's harder for me to reconcile that with then him saying, well, when it comes to getting ready for the season, I'm capable of preparing on my own. Because I'm like, well, I don't know if it really works that. If you want to have more input, shouldn't you be tied more to the team's off-season program?
Voluntary workouts. It's that simple. You don't have to be there. That's the thing about football, man. They put so much pressure on you to do things like, oh, you don't have to do it, but Johnny will, and Johnny's going to play on Sunday so because he showed up to this workout. Man, if you can show up and do your job and be prepared, then you can do that. I'm not mad at it, man. Honestly, at first I was thinking, I'm like, man, well, the Niners have this many guys. The Rams have this many guys. But the situations are different. They got new quarterbacks over there. They're trying to figure some things out now.
We got
the
new Hawks offensive coordinator. Hawks have a new coordinator.
I have a new coordinator, but you have a veteran quarterback who I feel like can pick up a playbook. So certain situations are different. I'm not mad at Russell. I understand the advantages of being there, but I also know that he has a lot of money and he can invest in people to take care of him, and he can still lead from outside of VMAC. People think that just because he's not in the building, he's not being a leader, he's not communicating. I guarantee you he is.
Bump, you've worn a head coaching hat before. If you're Shane Waldron, what do you do here with these guys that aren't showing up? Like, how do you stay on top of it and sort of install whatever you want when obviously all you can do right now are these Zoom sessions that the Seahawks clearly became enamored with last offseason?
Exactly that, Zoom. I mean, Zoom is taking over the world right now, man. Everyone rather meet virtually than in person, and that's all he can do. And communicate with Russell. I wonder how often they talk throughout a day or throughout a week. The communication has to be huge. Virtual, that's it, man. I mean, can he put together like PowerPoint presentations and maybe a virtual test? What do you do in this situation, A, B, or C? You got to get creative. Guys aren't there, but they're going to have to show up here pretty soon. So they'll figure things out.
Question number three. I think Urban Meyer is going to do well in Jacksonville, but my goodness, he is making it difficult for me to stay true to my take. Bump, this is what Urban Meyer had to say about wide receiver DJ Chark, who is a respected wide receiver in the NFL, about, I guess, what he has seen out of him now that he's reported to OTAs. Quote, I just didn't like his size. His strength, I just thought, was way below average, way below what we expect from our receivers. And he was told that. He's a big guy that played little last year, and that can't happen. Guys like Mike Thomas, Lewis Murphy are those big, strong, fast receivers. He's got to play big and strong. Conversations like this, I'm sure, happen every single day between a coach and players. When it's out in the open like that, how would you respond to that as a player if you were put in those shoes?
He might be telling the truth. He probably is telling the truth. But it's just disrespectful. Now you're telling your players, like, look, if I don't like something about you, I'm going to the public and I'm going to throw you under the bus. And that's kind of like a college move. That reminds me of Mike Leach. That's some Mike Leach stuff. Mike Leach went to the public and the media and talked about his player. That's the one thing I didn't like about Leach. He's like, man, keep that stuff in-house. You can say all those things without saying those things. You know, he wasn't the right fit for this. And, you know, we wanted this type of guy. He was like, there's ways you can dance around that. Urban Meyer is going to learn quickly. These aren't 18, 19, 20-year-olds where they're just going to take your stuff and deal with it and still show up. They're going to talk back to you. They're going to give you attitude. You know, they're grown men. They've been in this business longer than Urban Meyer's been in the NFL. He's going to learn quickly. He's got to change the way he maneuvers in this locker room, or he will lose these guys fairly quickly.
I think one of the best sort of philosophies that I've heard from a coach, they said you can always tell and talk about publicly what you want a guy to be. Do not talk about publicly what he is not. You can always talk about what you hope he becomes. But once you start quantifying and specifying his shortcomings, like, that guy's going to feel undercut. And there's going to be a limit of how hard he goes for you and how much faith he has in you, because he'll know that you don't fully believe in him. he'll know that you don't fully have his back. And I thought it was a pretty good way of putting it, of like, you can get a lot out of guys through fear. Like, you can. Like, and maybe this does hit a specific note with Chark, but in the back of DJ Chark's mind, he's always going to know that this guy told everybody what he thinks I wasn't. This guy told everybody the shortcomings I think I have. And that puts kind of a cap on how hard they will ultimately go and how much they'll believe in the guy.
And then what's Urban going to do? He's going to see him and smile. Hey, how you doing? You know, and everything's back to normal now, and I just talked about you. You know, like, you hit it on the head. Players have to feel like coaches have their backs. They understand it is a business. You can get cut whenever, but at least to the public, you have to look like a united force, and he didn't do that.
It's been a long time since Urban's had to worry about depth charts. And what I mean by that, like, Urban, you think about his last two jobs at Ohio State and Florida, like, every year he's getting star-studded recruits, right?
Your backups
and
are
so there's
stars.
Like, you don't like me, or you're not going to try hard for me. I'll put the next guy in line. Like, I don't have to worry about that. It's not like that in the NFL. Like, you can't have your best players not playing their best for you. You don't succeed that way.
When you're a first-time coach, though, is it any different when you're a first-time and this is a bunch of young players and you're trying to install a program? Is there anything to, hey, we're setting an expectation, a standard? Because I imagine for some players, they're vets, they've been here, they've done that bump. But there's got to be others who maybe look at this and they're like, oh, I haven't been accountable enough to this point in my career.
Yeah, maybe. I'm sure there are some guys who appreciate it. Definitely. I mean, there's a couple guys out there, that's probably the way that they prefer to be coached, you know, or things to happen out there. And I would assume those guys are old school guys. But these young guys, man, I mean, it's a different breed, man. They have to feel loved. They have to feel wanted. They have to feel protected. And Urban should understand that of all people, because he's dealt with young people longer than any of us have when it comes to coaching. So he's going to figure things out. That's the great thing about coaching. Just like every week in the NFL, teams figure things out. You make adjustments. He's going to figure things out. If he has a group of guys around him that he trusts who are experienced, then they'll be honest with him. And they'll say, maybe try this approach next time. And he'll look back and reflect and do all that stuff. I mean, if he doesn't do that, then he shouldn't be in coaching. Because that's all coaching is making adjustments.
That is Blue 42. Urban's an interesting case. I'm one of a guy that I know really well. His son played for Urban at Utah, and his son loved Urban Meyer. Like, absolutely 100% loved the way he related, like, really believed in him. And other players who have played for him have spoken very highly of him. From the outside, it's always seemed to me that he is someone, at least at the last two jobs, when the going's got tough or things have become, he's become criticized, he's quit. And I don't know the kind of longevity that he'll have, because I think those things tend to happen sooner in the NFL. Like, I think usually within the first couple years, every coach, even the ones that end up turning something around, like, there ends up being sort of a moment where it is sort of a ride or die. And I'll just look at, man, Pete Carroll, when he came here his first year, like, the get tough moment he had was Lendale White. They traded for Lendale White. They didn't give up all that much. It was a little bit of draft pick position to acquire Lendale White from the Titans. And he came here, and Pete liked his hardball attitude. And Lendale was a tough runner. And people love Lendale. Absolutely. Like, he's a charismatic person. And Lendale didn't practice much. There was a situation where there were some floods back in Tennessee. He told the team that he needed to go back and tend to his house. Turned out that he didn't actually go back and tend to his house. There was some uncertainty about that. And then when he still wasn't practicing, they cut him. They cut him like 5 weeks after they acquired him. They cut him in the middle of the offseason stuff. Pete never said a word publicly bad about Lendale. Like, he didn't say, hey, you have to be on board with us. Hey, you have to. It was like, hey, we had to go in a different direction, was as critical as it was. And Lendale to this day is probably extremely salty about that. But that was the chance for what you're talking about, Paul, of the sending the message and having a new culture. You know what sent the message? Cutting him. Like, that's what sent the message. You don't have to say anything. And I think Pete does it right in that he does not talk poorly about his players, even after they're gone. He really doesn't. And I don't know. I think the downsides of talking poorly about your players and any motivational thing it might get or like, oh, you got to be careful for that is outweighed by the fact that everybody's leery of you and their investment in you is limited because they're worried about how invested you are in them.
Relationships are huge in anything that we do, any type of business, especially teams. And once you start, you show your true colors, or I guess, so to speak, and you show like, look, our relationship is different than theirs. You know, if you can provide for me, then I'm going to treat you a certain way. But if you can't, then I'm going to talk about you. Then you lose trust. And that's what you need on the football field. You need trust. You got to be able to call a play and the players know that it's probably not going to work, but they're still going to run hard for you because they trust you. They believe in you and you have a good relationship. Once you start going down that road, you start to lose guys. And again, it's just different in college than the NFL, man. In college, man, you can just do whatever you want to. You can say whatever you want to. You can treat kids however you want to because you know you got them for 4 years. Got a transfer portal now. They got a year to leave, so it's different. Could be different these days. But, man, guys got control, you know, and you're dealing with kids. You start dealing with grown men, you got to switch it up. You got to be honest and transparent in a way that's respectful to anyone involved.
When you're dealing with a top-tier program like Florida, though, and like Ohio State, is the difference between your first-string wide receiver and your third- or fourth-string wide receiver as great as it is in the NFL? Because I think that's one of the biggest places. When you're at a powerhouse school, like, you have a depth of players because each year you're pulling in your top four receivers each recruiting year, your top three receivers. Like, you've got a ton of skill players. In the NFL, like, you have to be prepared and have depth, but man, like, your best one or two players, the difference between that guy and your third string guy is huge. And you can't afford to send. DJ Chark's a pretty decent player.
Yeah.
Like, he's someone, and if he disinvests, if he decides, like, okay, I'm out on this dude because he did this, you can't just necessarily make up for it. Like, well, I've got John, who's 2 years younger and just as highly regarded as a recruit as you were. Maybe he's not as good as you are right now, but he'll do what I say, so I'm just going to roll with him. You don't have that luxury in the NFL.
No, you don't. And you would think that the gap wouldn't be as big because everyone's in the NFL, but once you get there, man, it's just different. And you don't have the talent pool to pick from, and you're going up against higher competition, so your ones are everything. So you're right. He's going to learn so many lessons, man. I mean, he's a rookie. Him and Trevor, man, I bet you they're texting all the time, man, and sharing ideas and talking about their days, because Urban is a rookie in the NFL game. He is a good coach. I don't mind the toughness that he's trying to bring to this team, because they've been a debacle for a while. No one really respects Jacksonville. So you have to switch things up. But he's going to learn, man. You got to learn to talk to professionals. These are still professionals.
Well, one of my favorite, John Schneider, as a GM going into the first draft with Pete Carroll, he joked, he goes, I warned Pete, man, fifth, sixth, and seventh rounds, we're going to be drafting some guys you wouldn't recruit. And he said, and Pete laughed. And I was like, I'm not kidding, man. Like, I'm not joking. It doesn't mean they're worse football players, but we're going to draft some guys that you would have been like, yeah, I don't know if his foot speed's quite enough for what we're doing. It's different. It's different in this league. It's Danny and Gallant. We got Michael Bumpus with us here for the whole hour. Coming up next, this or that. Maura Dooley picks some topics and we choose sides. That's next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Gallant. 8:30 on Fridays, we get to make decisions. Do you get with this or do you get with that? Maura Dooley, our producer extraordinaire, is going to give us those choices. And we're going to debate amongst ourselves about them. You can feel free to chime in on the 710-710 text line, which is sponsored by Mac and Jack's. Maura, where are we starting?
All right, first up, because the Summer Olympics are coming up here soon. Which one do you choose, this or that, summer or winter Olympics?
Bump, which is your preference?
Okay, so winter Olympics, my favorite event is halfpipe. Like, I love watching the halfpipe. I like the speed skating. Is that what they call it when they race around? I love seeing that. But there's nothing touching the Summer Olympics, man. You got the fastest athletes in the world. running. I will never forget Summer Olympics in Atlanta. That was, while I was a kid growing up watching that, was ridiculous. Seeing Michael Johnson win a bunch of gold medals.
Yeah.
You got the high jumpers, the long jumpers. You got pole vaulting. I mean, there's nothing like summer. I'm going with the Summer Olympics all day. Usain Bolt. I mean, the Jamaican women running. I mean, come on. Can't touch the summer. What you got?
You can touch the summer. I think it's the Winter Olympics. And I like the Summer Olympics, but there are like three specific events that I like. Gymnastics, swimming, and sprinting. Basketball doesn't really count in the Olympics because it just doesn't feel the same when the United States is better than everybody. Winter.
They're not better than everybody anymore, though.
Yeah, they are. They're still better than everybody. Come on. They're still better than everybody. Even if they don't win it every year, we know that they're better than everybody. You're only going to be disappointed if you watch them. Where with hockey, you have hockey in the Winter Olympics, curling, biathlon, where you're skiing
curling's
and shooting
curling.
A gun.
Curling's not. Curling's,
you have to throw that out, Paul.
No, it's an entertaining watch. It's an entertaining
it's
watch.
No.
Better watch than some of the races that you see in the Summer Olympics. Speed skating, you have the luge, you have skeleton, which is a frontward luge, figure skating, which is, I think, beautiful. Come on, the Winter Olympics, it's just so different than anything that you traditionally watch. It has to be that.
It is the Summer Olympics.
I
will give you this. Figure skating, I've come around on. I like figure
it's
skating.
It's awesome.
The luge, the skeleton, and even to a certain extent the bobsled, they're not really sports because you're just sliding. Like, I sledded as a kid. Right? Like, that's your gravity's doing the work.
But the danger that's involved with it.
But that's that danger doesn't make a sport. Like, danger
makes it entertaining
is,
to watch.
Gravity is doing most of their work. Any situation where gravity does most of the work, not really. More activity than sport. Also, and this is a mark against the Winter Olympics, those Scandinavian countries have such an advantage. Like, Denmark is a powerhouse. Denmark has 15 people that live in it. And Denmark dominates. Every one of them wins three gold medals. And you know why? Because those aren't sports for them. Biathlon, where you cross-country ski and shoot, that's not a sport. That's called shopping in that country.
But
like let's not debate this
one too long so we can get some more.
Okay.
Those Nordic events, like that's not cross-country skiing. That's how they get to town.
I just like sports where the United States are the underdogs. Because that's right. The Winter Olympics, we are not the favorites.
Next one.
All right, more likely to prove the doubters wrong on their new team this season, Jared Goff or Sam Darnold?
Oh. Pass.
If I had to pick one of the two, I'm definitely rooting for Darnold more than Goff. I'm definitely rooting for Darnold more than Goff. Who's more likely to prove him wrong? Yeah, man, I'll go Darnold. I'll go Darnold because Darnold is out from under the thumb of not only Adam Gase, but the New York Jets. Like, shedding both of those... Like, actually, that he may be free to fly at this point. I've seen enough from Jared Goff. This will be his third coach.
Goff has zero expectations attached to him.
That's true.
Zero. The Panthers, at the very least, have placed expectations on Sam Darnold. Goff has had good moments in the NFL. Tell me one good Sam Darnold moment. I'll wait. I think it's Goff.
I'm seeing ghosts.
I got a good Sam Darnold
yes,
moment.
That's a stop moment.
He threw a ball last year against the 49ers that was filthy. He's running to his left. He flicks it back to the right. And that's when I was like, okay, this dude has legit arm talent. But it's got to be Jared Goff, right? I mean, you hear the way his coach is talking about him. I think he threw two bad footballs since he's been here. You know, he's excited about the dude. I think he's a veteran. He's refreshed. He's in a new environment. Who knows, man? I got to go with Jared Goff. Two-time Pro Bowler.
All right, guys, this is a really tough one. Mm. Which makes you feel more uneasy?
Oh.
The Rafael Montero experience or Tom Murphy's crazy eyes?
Oh, Montero's crazy eyes are endearing. Excuse me, Tom Murphy's... crazy
yeah.
eyes are endearing. Montero scares me. Like, I see him come out of the bullpen and I'm like, do I want to watch? Do I want to go and get a drink? I don't know.
Montero's the bad decision I've talked myself into. Like, I've rationally reached that decision and I know I've got to ride with it. Montero is the bad decision I've talked myself into. And anybody who's familiar with those sort of things, and I made a lot of those kind of decisions, like, knows exactly what it is. Montero is the much more unsettling when you're
Sounds like
I've rationally.
Life, Danny.
I've chosen this for myself. I deserve this pain. I deserve this. I deserve this.
I'm going Tom Murphy, man. Like, that's that face. If he made that face anywhere but on a playing field, he would be crazy. And if you're looking at me that way, I'm throwing something at you. Like,
whoa.
It just.
I make that face all the time.
That face, man.
To you.
That face, I don't know. It makes me. It reminds me of, you know, I grew up in L.A. There are people who didn't make great decisions in their lives who roam the streets of L.A. And they will come up to you and say and do some crazy things. That's what that reminded me of. I'm like, man, I'm back on Venice Boulevard right now.
The key with those people, too, is that you can't let them catch you looking at them. Like, you've got to be aware of them without actually engaging with them.
Yeah.
Looking in their crazy eyes is an invitation for them to bring their crazy over to you. So you've got to be aware of where they are so you can prevent an encounter with them. Yeah. Yeah, got to keep your head on a swivel with that. I'm persuaded by Bump's rationale there.
I'm with Bump too.
Man, you guys, you Paul's must like swayed. The Montero experience. That's what I'm hearing. Tom Murphy making a weird face. I make that weird face all the time.
No.
He's got
no,
intense
you've never
eyes,
made that
though.
Face. Yeah.
Murphy has really, like, his eyes are different than yours.
No. Nope. I can still tell you're not serious. I can tell you don't
it's
believe
creepy.
That.
It's creepy. It's not scary. It's creepy.
Yeah.
But why do you believe Murphy's face? He was jubilant after a home run. Or excuse me, after a walk-off hit.
It wasn't jubilant. There was nothing about that face
that
was jubilant. It was crazed.
All right, guys. More desperate for attention, Coach K or Tim Tebow?
I'm going to say it's Coach K because I think Coach K's is more deliberate.
Yeah, he's going on a farewell tour.
I think Tebow just doesn't know how to not be on a team. I think Tebow would pursue this even if he wasn't getting the attention. Like, I don't think he minds the attention, but I don't think he covets it. Like, two facts for Coach K. He's announcing his retirement in advance so he can take his flowers at every stop. So he can have the goodbye tour. The second thing is, did we just all agree to forget about the season when he quit because it was a bad team?
Which one?
1995, where he walked in. They were in the midst of their longest losing streak. They'd lost six in a row. It was their longest losing streak in 50 years. And he's like, ouch, my back. I can't coach the rest of the year. So he didn't have the 13-18 record on his overall. Like, he just didn't. Like, yeah, it's Coach K.
It felt like they quit last year, too. I know it's a different circumstance, but with COVID-19, come on. They had a chance to win that tournament. If Syracuse made it to the Sweet 16, Duke couldn't have made it that far.
Here's the thing with Coach K. So what if he wants his flowers? Every great athlete, D-Wade did it. Kobe did it. I mean, you announce, okay, this is going to be my last year. Let me take in all this left. The dude is 74 years old, man. He deserves his farewell tour. Like, I'm not mad at Coach K for that.
He's 75. Why doesn't he have any gray hair? He's 75. Why doesn't he have any gray hair?
Just
performance enhancing
just
hair.
For men.
Oh, he might care about how he looks. He's a 75-year-old man so concerned with how he looks that he dyes his hair.
It's jet black.
Man covets attention.
It's
he's
Tebow.
Not fooling anybody.
It's Tebow. All day it's Tebow.
No, it's Coach K.
It's Tebow, man. Coach K. I mean, Tebow, what would Tebow be without the limelight? He'd be lost, confused.
An athlete.
We'd be a Sasquatch out here in Washington. We wouldn't find him. We'd be a mythical creature. He needs the limelight. Coach K deserves this. Four national championships with like 16 Final Fours. Man, give him his roses. I'm all right with Coach K.
Lots of bags.
That is this or that. Many people have pointed out on the text line that I meant Norway, not Denmark. Yeah, you're right. I might have goofed on my Scandinavian countries with just 15 people in them. I might have mistaken Denmark for Norway. So I appreciate all 15 people that live in Norway pointing that out via the text line.
Yo, don't hate on Norway. That's where I'm from. You know, Ballard. We are the Norwegian part of town.
Lutefisk, Lefse. We'll beat Ballard. Yeah, sure. You betcha.
What's that?
You familiar with those kind of chants?
No.
Yeah, it used to be an old Ballard High School chant.
Oh.
Standing Gallant, what's the minimum expectation for a franchise quarterback in the NFL? We'll tell you next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Michael Bump is with us, too. You know what was pretty funny last night? Watching the Lakers season come to an end. It was great.
Bet it was.
It was great.
Bet it was.
Did you have a moment in the third quarter bump where you were like, they might pull this off? Because they're down, what, 30 in the first half?
Yeah, they were down 30. I had a glimmer of hope for like 2 minutes. They got it down to like 12. And I'm like, okay, if they can get it within 10 by the fourth, they have a chance. But Suns is when letting that go down.
And then Chris Paul started was out on the floor to start the fourth quarter and was doing the little old man walk where he was running around controlling the tempo and they just wouldn't let it go.
Hey, you know what? We're still great. We're still
it's true.
We're
just
still
not in 2021. Right.
What are you going to do next year? Somebody was asking. Also, they wanted you to come up with some solutions for the Portland Trailblazers. Like, how can you fix the Trailblazers?
Well, I don't think
Bump's
Lillard.
Idea is going to help Portland.
No, it's not going to help Portland. Yeah. We need Dame. Let's take him. But what Dame needs, he needs to just do what everyone does. He needs a legit superstar with him. And, you know, he has to – that's the thing about Dame. He doesn't want to go that route, but if he doesn't, he's in his 30s now, he's going to miss his opportunity to win.
I think most people know that I'm not a LeBron fan, and it's not because I don't appreciate his game. He just annoys me.
No, it's because you say it every single day
that
you're not
a
LeBron fan.
Well, I have to because, you know, there has to be some of us who, you know, don't like – guys who were, I don't know, fake. Anywho, it's really impressive that he'd gone 18 years without playing for a playoff team that lost in the first round. And this got me thinking about just the way that we look at quarterbacks. You know, we expect, and it didn't happen every single year, but I think we generally expect to see Tom Brady in the second round of the playoffs, just based off of what we have seen over the last 20 years. I guess you don't necessarily have that same expectation for the other top quarterbacks in the game, though, because I haven't really seen Drew Brees get a whole lot of criticism for when the Saints underachieve in the playoffs, or Aaron Rodgers to that same extent. We're starting to get there with Russell Wilson. It had me wondering, what's the minimum expectation from a wins perspective that a starting quarterback, an elite starting quarterback in the NFL, should have attached to him? Like, what are you supposed to do over the course of a season? You're supposed to make the playoffs, no doubt. But is that it? I mean, I feel like if we want to accurately gauge how great all these quarterbacks are, maybe we need to hold them to a higher standard.
They got to get out the first round. And I think that's why people are so tough on Russell, is that he just hasn't been able to win a playoff game, it seems like, in forever. That's what you have to do. As a quarterback, you have to be responsible for winning at least one game in the playoffs. Like, look, he won that game for us. He took the team. He carried them. He did everything he had to do to get that done. And we haven't seen that with Russell as of late. That's why people are hard on him. But I also just want to remind people, like, goodness gracious. Yeah, you might not like Russell, the way he talks. He's not showing up the OTAs. But there's no denying his greatness. He's still one of the great ones. He's still a winner during the regular season. Now he's got to win a couple during the playoffs. He wins one or two playoff games this year, I think people change the way they look at him.
I totally agree with that. I always look at a team with a franchise quarterback that doesn't get to the playoffs, and I'm like, what happened? Like last year with Deshaun Watson, there's a little bit of that. Of like, okay, I think Deshaun's one of the five best quarterbacks, but that team was terrible. I think you see why, and the coach ends up getting fired in the middle of the season, and they traded DeAndre Hopkins. Like, I think you can see why. When a team with a franchise quarterback doesn't make the playoffs, I'm like, huh, what exactly happened there? When they get to the playoffs, then it becomes, hey, anything can happen in that environment, and I don't hold a loss against a quarterback. Like, I really don't, because so many different things can happen, and Peyton Manning has a number of first playoff game exits in the playoffs. I think sometimes that's a reflection of how much a team relies upon its quarterback. And man, you start going up against better teams and they can impact that. If you're able to pressure the quarterback, if you're able to get pressure without blitzing, that's going to be a tough day for that. If you go 3 or 4 years without having playoff success, 3 or 4 playoff bursts, then I think you start looking. And I think that's the spot that Russell's in. I agree with Bump. Like, hey, 1 year where they make a... They've made the playoffs 8 of the 9 years he's been here. That's remarkable. They've won a playoff game in 6 of the 9 years that he's been here. Like, that's a really remarkable stat. Like, that's a really remarkable stat that they put together. But you do start to get a little bit of that, okay, Like, it's been a bit. There's only been one of these playoff victories in the past four seasons, and I know that other things have happened with the roster. I think a lot would be answered if they go on a playoff run this year, but you're starting to look at your watch and say it's been a little while since we've seen him have a transcendent game in the playoffs.
Especially against a really good football team, right? I mean, in 2015, they win, but they win on that Blair Walsh shank, and then the next round they play that Carolina Panther team, which was awesome, but they got into such a big hole early on. And, I mean, they got pretty close to potentially tying that game. The next year, your first victory is against the Lions. Do you put a lot of stock into that? You beat the Eagles when Carson Wentz leaves the game. Those are, I think, the things that also you look at and you're wondering, okay, he's been able to win when he has that great defense attached to him. But when has he had that sort of signature moment, I'm doing it all by myself, and also getting a victory along the way in the playoffs?
We can't knock his wins, though. You can't say, oh, it was the Lions. They're not very good. Oh, Philly left. That's football. Someone's going to go down. There's going to be situations. You can't knock his wins and then say he's not winning enough. I mean, a win is a win. In this league, the NFL, you got 1 week to prove yourself. You take a win any way you can get it. It's tough to get these wins. So I understand people criticizing Russell for not winning as of late, but let's not go back and knock the last three playoff wins that he has.
I do think, though, the context is important on that front, and I think that's why maybe there is a little more frustration on that front. That makes
sense. The frustration, but like real talk, the team was better his first 3 and 4 years than it was later on. And he's been the reason that they've stayed in the playoff chase and not had a losing record in those years. So to say, like, okay, it hasn't been as impressive, yeah, but he's been doing more. And that whole time, you've seen it. He's a big game player. We've seen, I don't have any doubts about that. He is a big game player.
Right, and you can't put him in, say, I would say right now, the person who probably has the most scrutiny on him in this category would be Lamar Jackson, right? I mean,
yes.
Two first-round exits. Yeah. We think he's a great quarterback. I think we all agree he's phenomenally talented, and yet two playoff games, and they have just been lost in those games.
I've been looking at this text line, and there are so many Russell Wilson haters right now. Okay, you don't agree with the man, you don't like the way he moves. Wait till he's gone. Wait until this dude is gone, and then I want to see what these text lines look like. People forget.
I'll be
like,
miserable.
Even if you don't like him as a person, it's still a gift and a privilege to have him on your team. He's one of the best. So y'all better simmer down with all this. Oh, Russell's this. He's that. He's a winner. Has he won in the playoffs lately? No, he hasn't. And he needs to fix that. But 12-4 last year, y'all sure were at the games with your 12. Well, you weren't at the games last year. I was at the game last year. But y'all sure were at home cheering him on and rooting for him. So, I mean, fair weather fans, y'all kill me right now, man. Just ride with your boy. Ride with him. He's won a lot of games for you. Have some faith in this dude.
A powerful, strong finish to our hour with Michael Bumpus, unlike his beloved Los Angeles Lakers.
Bump,
thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, no one stomped on our logo. Respect Lakers. See y'all, man.
I know. I wish we couldn't say that. That is Michael Bumpus, everybody. It's Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. Bump with us on Wednesday, 8 o'clock hour, Friday, 2. What do you do with Jared Kelnick? The struggles are continuing, and while the Mariners had a nice little win last night, that's the thing we can't stop thinking about. We'll talk about it next.